The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We have made it to the final hour in what's been a very busy afternoon. It's been a busy week, but we expected that with all the things on the docket for June. We did not expect Monday to be dominated by the Nick Saban announcement, and we are going to talk about that now with Ken Smithmeyer, the judgment expert. Ken Smithmeyer is a former hospital executive who spends a lot of time now advising many different entities, from corporations to college and professional teams. And we've had many conversations with him in the past about the Saban dynasty. Ken, thank you for the time. Great to have you with us. And we were communicating last week when Coach K set the path in motion for his next season to be his final. And we were joking about, I wonder if Saban would ever consider that. And here we get the news on Monday. First, let's talk about the news and how this news is resonating around the country.
You know, Paul, I thought it was too close to the timing of the Coach K news to be coincidental. you have said on TV today that coaches, you know, can't use Saban's age against them, but it's the only thing they have, right? They can't claim that he doesn't win. They can't claim that he doesn't produce NFL guys, and they can't claim that he doesn't play young players. You know, guys get plenty of chances. And so, if I had been an opposing coach after Coach K made his announcement, the first thing I'd be saying to the recruits that I was competing against Saban for is, look, Coach Saban's going to do the same thing. He's about 70 and Coach K is 71. And so you need to recognize, you know, that Saban's not going to be there if you sign with him this year. And so I just think the timing of it was such that they wanted to blunt that effort. And I think it was a smart play.
Ken, you know Nick Saban, you know that program, and I'm not asking you in an official sense because you have been there and have had dealings with them, but you have always maintained that Saban was different, and every time it looked like maybe it was over, you pushed back a little bit. But I'm curious if you think the COVID year where he was masterful, I think we would all agree on that, maybe changed the calculus of how he sees the next few years.
Here's my theory, Paul. 100% theory out of my head. No facts to go along with it. I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase success versus significance. But it's a common thing that people who have done well in their lives start to deal with, whether they know the wording or not, as they get older. And I think Coach Saban's clearly at that point. Now, maybe he uses those words, maybe he doesn't. But if we go back, a couple of years, he had his hip surgery. And then last year, he contracted COVID. And at his age, I guarantee you, just like me, probably just like you, he and his wife know people that have either died, they're friends of theirs, or gotten sick. And so somewhere in his head, that mortality clock is ticking. And I heard you say, and I agree, I think everybody agreed, I thought it was noteworthy last year after this championship how gleeful he was. He was genuinely appreciative. And my feeling has always been that he's a guy that lived every year staring at the edge of the abyss. And national championship just gave him a day, maybe a half a day, that he could step back. You know, he hated the thought of losing much more than he enjoyed the winning. Last year, I thought he enjoyed the winning. And it was apparent on his face. And to me, that's a person who kind of understands that significance of what he did far beyond any paycheck that he gets or any number of years of extension. If I'm right, if that is true, then I think the extension just gives him a period of time within which he's going to make the decision that he thinks is best for himself. But more importantly, it's going to be best for the program, and he's going to make it a time of his choosing, which is what he deserves. And so in my opinion, assuming that his health stays the same, he won't work the rest of this contract. And I don't know if it's going to be 1 year, three, five. Nobody knows. Maybe he doesn't know. But I think that's where he is. I think he is thinking much more about significance than he is more years on a contract and a lot more bigger paychecks to get.
Ken Smith, let's talk about people. I mean, generically, of course. I mean, you were in the hospital world. We both know physicians who, you know, talk like they're going to work forever, and they finally reach a point. CEOs, you know, sometimes are mandated to step down at a particular age, often 65, which does seem rather young. Coaches don't have that, and it just seems like, you know, you get out there. You said the abyss. It's even beyond that. You get into some black hole where it's hard to make a good decision because you have so many people depending on you. I remember sitting there with Coach Bryant on his final day, Ken, and he was meeting with a group of sports writers, and someone asked him, you know, had he considered leaving the previous year when he broke Amos Alonzo Stagg's record? And he said, "Yeah, I really thought about it. Now, I really, in many ways, wanted to, but I knew how many families and how many people depended on me." I know that's a long-winded question, but when you get to this point, how do you know?
Well, that's right, Paul. And 2 years ago, I would have said to you that I think the Saban clock was ticking faster than I think it is now. I really believe that last year was a transcendent moment for him. And that's when we saw a different Nick Saban. He had such joy out of that year and out of that team. And I think it brought something to his life and to his face that maybe it was there before, didn't show, or maybe it wasn't there at all. And not to get too theoretical with you here, Paul, but in the Japanese culture, there's a thing called ikigai. It's I-K-I-G-A-I. And it's when a person is in a stage of their life where they have a reason to get up every morning. And if they have this reason to get up, why would they ever retire? And it has to meet four criteria. One, it has to be something they love. He clearly loves coaching. It has to be something they're good at. There's no question about that. It has to be something the world wants or needs. Well, your show depends on the world wanting and needing football. And it has to be something that someone will pay you for. And when all those conditions are met, the Japanese theory is, why would you retire? And so I think he's past now that point of being in the black hole, staring at the abyss. I really believe this. And I think he is now in that state where he feels like he's getting things the way he wants them. And I suspect that either on his current staff or in the next year or two people he replaces, he's going to identify somebody. And when he identifies that person, that's when he's going to start to say, you know what, maybe this is okay to move on out. And that's when he's going to do it. And so I just think he is beyond what other CEOs or doctors like you described. I think he's beyond that mental state where it's burning him out. I think for him, it is invigorating, and he can see a future beyond football, and I really believe that.
Ken, I want to talk to you about succession because it has, you know, the heir apparent, the coach in waiting, has failed miserably in college sports. Jimbo Fisher, it didn't work well with Bobby Bowden. Will Muschamp gave up on it. Others never even got to the final disposition. And, you know, we saw it last week with Krzyzewski. He and Saban are certainly standalones. He anointed his successor. You know, some would have said just walk away. He had a terrible year. So you mentioned the staff part. And do you think it's wise to have an heir apparent that we know about? Or do you think, knowing Saban like you do and like we all do, he's more than likely have chosen one with the consultation of his administrators and then walk away and say, this is the person?
I don't think he would ever declare an heir apparent. I don't think he should, for all the reasons you just said about how it's failed, particularly in football. It seems to work maybe a little bit better in basketball. We'll see how John Shire does following Coach K. That's those big shoes to follow. But it certainly has worked for Ryan Day. It certainly worked for Lincoln Riley, you know, but they weren't declared heir apparents. Urban Meyer crashed and burned, and Bob Stoops just suddenly gave it up. And boom, those two guys are there. I suspect that as Saban looks at people, maybe he's been doing it the last year or two, he's looking at some of the candidates that he has for his staff and saying to himself, might this person be a candidate to replace me? honestly, the only person he has on the staff right now might be Bill O'Brien, but I'm not sold on that. Let's say Saban goes 5 years. I looked O'Brien up. He's 51. He's going to be 56 years old. I think even more than in the past, the future collegiate football environment is going to really need a younger guy, number one. Number two, most of O'Brien's history is in the NFL. Yeah, he's got a Belichick connection. But he had a few years there at Penn State, went straight back to the Texans. And, you know, most of those guys, once they seem to get that NFL virus in their blood, it doesn't come out. And so I think if I were you, Paul, the business that you do, I'd really watch who the staff hires who are the next couple of years and also see who leaves and who stays. Look, he could have a guy on the staff right now that he is extremely high on that is not a high profile guy. And you and I wouldn't have a way to know what Saban thinks about it.
So intriguing. And again, I think I heard you pretty loud and clear. This coaching to 77, fans believe that. I'm not sure if I heard you correctly, you believe that.
I don't believe it, Paul. And I'll tell you something else. I've learned this about myself in my own retirement. When you do get out of that grind, or when you get to the point in the job where maybe you transcend the grind, like I think Saban is a little bit, your reality of the rest of the world beyond whatever you've been doing all of your life intensifies. And just because he loves being with a team and just because he's always been with a team doesn't mean it has to be with the Alabama football team until the day he dies. I don't think he's that shallow of a guy. I think there's much more depth to him. And, you know, we never know what kind of conversations he has with his friends, with his business partners, with his wife. But I'll bet you all those things go on. And I just have to believe that they're, believe it or not, Paul, this is what I think. I think there's another stage, another evolution of Nick Saban yet to come. And maybe he knows what it is, or maybe he doesn't know, or maybe he won't know until he gets out of the current box that he's in. But I think that's what's going to happen. I think he maybe feels it. And I think there's going to be another phase of Nick Saban. So I'd say whichever direction he goes, if you're in that field, you better look out.
Yeah, before you go, and I know I've extended you longer than we were supposed to, but he's dabbled in business. And what you just said opens the door. And I think it would take an extraordinary person, but, you know, Saban travels in a world of extraordinary people. He's not like the rest of us who, you know, when we see someone of that ilk, maybe our jaw drops. I mean, he can walk in any room in any boardroom in this country. And I just wonder, and I think you said it, I'm going to ask you to confirm my suspicions that, you know, some mega billionaire says, you know what, I want you to, I've got a new venture that will be something that you've never experienced before. And, you know, here's, you know, I mean, the price won't even matter. It's just the challenge.
Won't matter. Paul, yeah, I absolutely do agree. You know, the one thing Nick Saban's never done, he's never done a startup of anything, right? Because football teams aren't startups. They're there. He's done rebuilds. He's very good. And by the way, the talents that it takes to rebuild a failing company, very similar to what it takes to start up a company. There are startups everywhere. There's tremendous things happening in sports. For all we know, with all this NIL stuff and the portal and the CFP going to 12 games, we don't know if there's going to be some clash of forces within the football league that causes some dramatic reordering of things. Who would be better equipped and better suited for a guy like him to come in, not in the twilight of his career, but potentially, believe it or not, at a second peak and do something like that? And I'm not predicting that in football. I'm just saying, you know, there are all kinds of things that would be available to Coach Saban that could replace or at least go a long way towards replacing that excitement and the feel that he gets from a challenge of a football team, of building a team every year, and competing against the best of whatever the field is.
Ken Smithmeyer, one of the most interesting conversations we have had on this subject in a very long time. It won't be the last. Ken, thank you. Thank you so much for making the time, and we will talk. We will keep this dialogue going. We're heading to a break right now, and we'll get your reaction to all of this when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we are back, and we appreciate you joining us. We'll get some reaction to what Ken Smithmeyer said a minute ago. And you can join us at 855-242-7285. He clearly does not believe Nick Saban will see the end of that contract. I think that was fairly plain. Let's get back to the calls. And Kevin is in North Carolina. Hello, Kevin. Go right ahead.
Hello, Paul.
Hey there. How are you?
Hey, man. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Good to visit with you again. I cannot believe that the number would be 12. I could scream like some of your callers, but I'm not going to do that to you out of respect. But listen, let's do some division here. If you pick 12, you're gonna pick four that are going to get a bye.
Right.
That would mean that they would only have to play three games to win the national championship, as opposed to the first eight that would have to win four. Obviously, there is no other sport in the world other than football that causes the most injuries, okay? And then you have, I presume they're going to do it immediately, give that the four in grace schools the bye. They're going to get a week extra recoup from the conference championship game, or maybe even 2 weeks.
Correct.
If they don't play in their conference championship games. That is preposterous. And then you have the other thing I've mentioned to you before. The people on the committee, the boardroom there, they're going to make these decisions, all have ties to something. You love the University of Tennessee, okay? You went there. You're never going to change that. Good. I'm happy for your loyalty. But everybody in that room has some kind of connection to their school and or conference with this much money involved. And then, of course, they're going to say, oh, integrity. These people all have this integrity, blah, blah, blah. Listen, I don't know how long anybody over 18 could be able to figure out. There's a lot of polecats and scallywags on this planet. And when there's this much money, they're super duper goats, polecats and scallywags. You know, if they're going to go to 12, Paul, go to 16, for God's sakes. You know, go to 16. I'm for 8 or 16. I don't want anybody to have the power to give four schools by subjective.
Yeah, but Kevin, let me counter it by saying, the NFL, which has a great playoff system, it's what happens late in the season. It's about the first round bye, and there is a premium on having a better record, first round bye and home field advantage. And it seems to me that college football is adhering to that strategy by 12. I was shocked by it, but the one thing it does, and some friends of mine have pointed this out, it does give college football a chance to own some real estate in the month of December, which frankly they cede now to a bunch of meaningless bowl games.
Can I interject something?
Sure.
We all know why they're doing it, because they need more money because the hit they took on pandemic, obviously, duh. Okay. But I concur. But, you know, you don't – there's a lot of things I could point out, but I can't, you know.
Well, no, I agree.
NFL,
But hold on a second, Kevin. Everyone took a hit. You're right. But the rich can survive that hit. I think we're finding out the pandemic is survivable. But what they're also facing are cries of exclusion, and I think they're concerned about that too. Now, that's in keeping with a lot of other trends that we all talk about every day in this country. And their biggest problem is that the college football playoff is diminishing in terms of not only ratings but importance, and they have to try something. Their stubbornness in staying with this as long as they have has boomeranged on them.
Yes. A couple more interjections. Yes, we need Loyola of Chicago to make the Final Four. We need the rooting interest of the underdogs, big time, okay? The other thing is, if before they do this, they need to make the ACC and the SEC play 9 conference games. End of story, okay?
Well, Kevin, the argument now is that maybe college, and no, this will never happen, but Pat Forty made an argument yesterday that they almost need to play less, because we're now getting the season is going to have to start earlier. There would be fewer buys, because I mean we are now talking about a very crammed schedule.
Right, and to hell with final exams.
Well, that was always a farce anyway.
Yeah, but the other thing is, listen, if they do this with 8 or 16. And somehow, have the blunt.
Why are you so opposed? Why are you so opposed to the bye? I mean, the reason why you have to have a bye is you have to give these conference championship games some meaning, because otherwise, I mean, let's say you had Alabama and Georgia; they're both already in the playoffs. They have to. I mean, there has to be a reason to watch that game other than one school holding up the trophy afterwards, and getting a home field bye is fairly. If you use the parlance of the NFL. That's an attractive quality.
Well, I mean, I'm saying that I don't want 4 schools anointed to have a bye.
Well,
when they would have, you know what I'm saying?
I hear you, but
you
can't have 16. You have to do that. Otherwise, there's nothing to play for. And by the way, Kevin, we're not really sure what these conferences, I mean, most of the major conferences have resisted this in the past because they wanted to protect the integrity of the conference championship games. What are they going to say now? We had Bob Boltby on the other day, and I mean, he flat out admitted you can't really come up with a salient argument for the playoff. That doesn't mean they won't do it. They're obviously going to do it. We will take a break. We have 30 minutes remaining on a Wednesday afternoon, and we are back with your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hey, we're back. Final 30 minutes, and Pat is up next in Austin, Texas. So hello, Pat.
Hello, Paul. How are you today?
We are doing great. What's up?
You asked who would last coach to wear a tie on the sidelines.
Right.
And I believe it was Howard Snellenberger.
Boy, I think you're right.
And before that, I would say Joe Paterno.
Well, I tell you, another guy, yeah, you might be right about Paterno. I know Jackie Sherrill always wore a tie wherever he was. I know Joe did. Howard did. I can't think of too many. I mean, we're going back a good bit. But in recent years, though, I'm not sure. Jim Tressel wore a tie when he was at Ohio State. So,
right.
But not many. I haven't seen one in a while.
I haven't either. But you asked that question, I thought I'd give my answer.
Well, I'm glad you did. I forgot about Howard, who we just lost a couple of months ago, and what a great coach he was. Thank you so much. We Daily Double in Austin. Let's go back there and talk to Bruman. How are you?
Admiral Feinbaum, what's going on?
Quite well. Thank you. Thank you, Sailor.
Got two things. I would like to have a shout-out to a lady named Kissy, who was the house mother at the KA house in Alabama years ago.
Whoa.
Going through some troubling times.
I'm glad to hear that you remember her.
The other thing is I'd like to thank you for laying into the Texas fans last week. You really got them riled up.
Wow, that was such a pleasure to do, because they're my favorite fan base out there. Anything I could do to give them a really good day.
Well, it was just fantastic the way they immediately jumped on. Feinbaum's a homer. Feinbaum, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Feinbaum this, Feinbaum that. But anyway, I know. I just wanted to thank you for doing that.
Bruman, I know they were upset. I'm not sure anything I said wasn't true, though.
You're exactly correct. And that's what hurts them the worst. Not being relevant anymore with their network, having to show the 0-5 game with Vince Young all the time. I mean, come on, you know.
I bet that one gets a lot of play on LHN.
It is, and I live right around the corner from your high school, White Station.
Oh, really?
And I remember, I'm out here taking care of some of my mother's business, but I do remember you wrote an article one time about one of the pitchers at White Station, and he waited outside to meet you because you said he would have been better off playing on the softball team.
that takes me back a few years.
I love your show and just wanted to give you a shout.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, man.
You bet. There are a lot of things in my career I remember. I do not remember that one since I didn't start writing until college. But maybe it was a special edition for the high school paper. Let's continue with Brian. Three in a row from the state of Texas. Hey, how about that? Brian, good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I wanted to talk a little bit about the college football playoffs. So I think I have a little bit different take. Everyone keeps focusing on these conference championship games. You know, before we had a conference championship game, we just declared the winner based on the record. Why couldn't we just have the two division winners of each league play each other in the conference championship sites? They do it in the NFL kind of de facto, so why couldn't we do that? The other thing, too, is the bowl games. You know, they're hardly nobody attends unless it's the college football playoff or a Rose Bowl. So my idea would be kind of like NASCAR. The biggest race of the year is the first game of the year, so draw a lottery and let everybody win. Go to a bowl game at the beginning of the year. You start on Labor Day weekend on Thursday. You finish on Monday. So that way everybody gets to go to a bowl game. You can play them all over the country because the weather will be nice. And at the end of the year, you focus on the college football playoff.
Yeah, I mean, Brian, I appreciate the call. And I don't want to quibble. I think the first thing would be difficult because you have all these games already set for television. And, yeah, the weather may be nice in some places, but you called from Houston. I'd hate to go to an outdoor game in Houston in late August. Let's move along and talk to Marcus, who is up next. Hey, Marcus, go right ahead.
Hi, Paul. I think the 12 teams is perfect. I would love to see the conference champions with the four best records have the 1-4 seeds. And then I'd love to see the first round games played at the home stadiums of the top four out of the last, what would it be, 8 teams, I believe. I think that game needs to be at a university or a campus site.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Marcus, that in the models that are floating around, that you're going to see a lot of home games. And I know that's problematic in some places, but that's part of it. I mean, if you get a game at Wisconsin in December, they should get the advantage of having a team have to go up there. That would be a tough place for a Florida-type team to play, but that's why you fight so hard for the home field. It's the same way in the NFL. I mean, we're seeing the NFL playoffs moving over to college, and where home field, wild card, home fields and buys become premium.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I just don't understand Division II, Division III, they've been doing this for years. Like, I grew up 30 minutes from Mount Union, so they're playing – you know, deep into December every year for a national championship. So the amount of games to me doesn't really mean much. I mean, high school teams in the state of Ohio, you play 15 to win your state championship. I think Texas is even more, 16 or 17. So this whole idea about the more games you play, the more chances you get hurt. I mean, that's why you play the game, though. You want to play the best teams, and you don't play the best teams all the time until the playoffs.
No, it's a really good point. Marcus, thank you for the call. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.